Hey, Taylor.
Hey.
You're looking quite like the sunset today.
Thank you so much. I love this sweater. It's the first time I'm wearing it this year.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of reminiscent of the sunset over the Blue Ridge Mountains.
I feel like there's a song about that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We just finished recording an amazing episode from an adult who spent time as a teenager in the former Patrick Henry Boys and Girls Home.
Mm-hmm. We weren't prepared for sort of the route that his story took. It was very much filled with hope and resilience on his part. He's a quietly inspiring person
who really focused on the opportunities that came his way in a very vulnerable situation. I hope that you will listen and you will think about how you could provide opportunities to kids who are coming from trauma and vulnerable situations. It's a quieter, more thoughtful episode.
Yep. We hope you enjoy. Everybody, welcome to another episode of the Mended Futures podcast. Today we have Travis Foley, who was a member of one of our group homes back in the day. So thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Travis used to be a radio host, so he's used to this.
I'm used to the mics, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a late night FM radio voice?
I had my own. I was a part-timer at the time. I was at country station here in Lynchburg, WYYD. I had my own part show, Rockin' Country Saturday Night. So that was one of the shows that I was very happy to do every Saturday night. So
you're famous?
No, I wouldn't go that far. But I did hear a couple times that there was a bunch of folks in Bedford County that would go into a field, have all the cars parked in a circle with the, their headlights, and they would just dance to the music that I was playing.
That's so cool.
You were their hype man.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah.
So
I didn't get to experience it that myself. Mm-hmm. I was just told that that had occurred a couple times.
You were the facilitator.
Yeah, I was the facilitator of the music.
So. You were in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about your childhood. Tell us about how you came to Patrick Henry.
So I had gotten diabetes when I was 11. So I was at Virginia Baptist for like 10 days getting regulated, with insulin and whatnot. And that pretty much set me on a course where my mother would be unable to take care of me because insulin at that time was pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
She basically couldn't afford the insulin that, I needed to stay alive. So there were a bunch of other things, that, of course, when you're young and having a child, you don't have the resources available to raise the child, So I'm glad that she made the decision to send me to the home to where I could be, that I could be raised in the right way. And as I grew up with a lot of brothers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and stable house parents. Mr. and Mrs. White were really down home, just pure as can be. Sometimes I felt like they were my own parents.
Mm-hmm.
They treated me just like every other boy that was there in the Stevens Cottage.
Wow.
There at the main campus. So they even stuck around an extra year before retiring to make sure that I graduated from Stevens Cottage. So that was good.
Talk about self-sacrifice.
Yes.
Or something for the greater good.
Mm-hmm.
So folks listening, this was in the 80s.
Yeah.
Under Patrick Henry Boys and Girls Homes and you were in Brookneal.
Yes.
And that is not the story that I thought you were going to tell. Yeah. I did not know that it would have to do with something medical. So I would say that's not typical.
Yeah. From 85 to 89 was when I was there at the home.
How old were you at that time?
I was 14.
Okay.
When I came. It was a nice August summer day. My grandmother and my mom brought me down, and I met Dr. Robert McCullough that day. He pretty much just said, hey, this is pretty much what it's going to be. But we'll try to ease you in as good as we can, And I think for any child that was thrusted into that type of situation, you don't know what to think.
Mm-hmm.
You're having to get your bearings. It was pretty rough for me in the beginning because, I'm sure every child that gets put there felt like they were abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you go through those feelings. You go through this time to where you think, woe is me, But I don't think it took me that long to start enjoying what Patch Henry was. Probably not many, but I took advantage of all the resources that the home provided me. Being a part of the Boys and Girls Choir at the boys' home, I got to travel, to Virginia, North Carolina, Maryland, D.C., New York. Not many kids get to go to those places.
Mm-hmm.
So performed in churches, just big events that we sang, gospel music. We also sang patriotic music. Still have both of those cassette tapes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
And if anybody on there listening doesn't know what a cassette tape is, you might want to look it up on Google. But we actually got to go into a recording studio to do both of those albums.
Wow.
But that was, I guess that's the big thing that I took advantage of the situation that I was in.
Mm-hmm.
I loved school. I know I'm a nerd. I love school. I graduated with honors. I took advantage of the situation that I had and tried to do the best with what I could. I had a bunch of brothers, so, school was fun. Not many people can say that, I guess, as well. Mr. McCullough, the house parents that I had, really gave me a good basis for what I should do as a Christian.
Would you say you had meaningful relationships with, your house parents? You speak of Mr. McCullough. You speak of your brothers. You had a mm-hmm. number of meaningful relationships at that time?
Yeah, actually, to this day, I still have some of those relationships. Mm-hmm.
How long did it take you to bond with the other boys that you were living with? Was it one of those things where you got there and you're like, people are here for a lot of different reasons, How did that go?
Well, I'll tell you, with Dale, first time I met him, I was pulling someone off of him because one of the boys was really picking on him, kind of hitting him around a little bit. Pulled him off, and I said, hey, why don't you pick on someone your own size? Because
You Dale, gave him the line.
Dale was a short kid back then. So this guy was actually rather taller, and I pulled him off, said, pick on someone your own size. And he backed off and went on his way. So Dale, I think we became best friends. He was the best man in my wedding.
Wow.
So, done things for him. He's done things for me over the years. So it's just, we've had that relationship for a very long time. He's one of my oldest friends. So.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned your mother and your grandmother, and then you also mentioned that you felt abandoned. Did you maintain the relationship with your mother and your grandmother while you were living in the group home?
Slash, what was your relationship like with them prior to going into the group home?
So, with my grandmother, she's, of course, since passed, but we had a very weird relationship. I felt like she was always nagging me, like my mom. But something occurred, I think, when I was, I want to say it was shortly after I was being diabetic. I think it was probably when I was 12. We were coming back from having ice cream. And we're making a turn to go down her street. And this car came over the hill and hit broad, hit me broadside on my side. Mm-hmm. And I think after that, that wreck, it changed our relationship greatly. Mm-hmm. She no longer, she was totally a different, different relationship.
In a positive way?
In a positive way. Hmm. Yes.
It was a wake up call, maybe.
Maybe. Yes. I think for my mom, like I said, it's hard to be a kid and have a kid. Mm-hmm. So, I think our relationship has gotten better over the years, but I think that there are still times where I feel like she doesn't get me, or we're not on the same level playing field. So she has different beliefs than I do in regards to certain things, politics, religion, that sort of thing. And I think that puts us on an uneven field. So I wish I could say that our, I think we get along just fine now, but there are times where, you know, we don't agree. Not everybody agrees, mm-hmm. I know. But we just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Tell us about the positives and the negatives of living in a group home setting, because as you know, Patrick Henry transitioned to or rebranded to 518 Family Services, mm-hmm. and a lot of the services now are focused on prevention, and group home or a group home setting is an intervention. So what were some positives, but also tell us what were some negatives about living in a group home setting?
So lots of positives. I guess when I was growing up in high school, I was part of a lot of cliques. I didn't, I'm sure there were kids there that didn't like me, but I'm sure there were plenty that did. And I got along with everybody. So that's kind of why I was in different cliques.
Mm-hmm.
When you have a lot of brothers from a home, you kind of have backup, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So you always felt that that you didn't have to worry. You always had somebody that backed you up.
Mm-hmm.
I always had an easy time making friends. I didn't have a hard time. I was always outgoing, always talking to people. When I think about any negatives, I suppose, I mean, you have certain boys that just don't like you for whatever apparent reason. And that was, I was of the state of mind that if you didn't like me, that actually hurt me. I always mm-hmm. wanted to try to make it better. Mm-hmm. I don't like anybody that didn't like me. Mm-hmm. You know, I always try to make it right. But you just, whatever you do, you're not always going to, you're not always going to have that person like you for whatever reason they didn't like you. So I think that was part of the problems that I had at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm. And you were organized in cottages, and there were multiple cottages. So it would be like multiple families living on the same campus.
Same campus.
How many boys lived in your home?
at the time that I came on, it was pretty full, about nearly 12.
How did you start to develop a relationship with your house parents? Was that a right away thing, or did it take a little bit longer?
I think Mr. White, he wanted to get to know me, and the way that he would go about doing that would be to take us guys to, they would take one of the vans to pick up breads and other pastries and other stuff. It was like a, not a weekly, but maybe a monthly thing to where we would go up to Lynchburg here and pick up those items. And he would ask us a bunch of questions, you know, about ourselves and our past. Mrs. White, she just got to know you just by talking to you just every day. You know, we would do our chores and whatnot, and I was never good at chores, so I'd always be running laps out on the and you know, the circle out front.
So there was discipline.
There were chores and there was discipline. But what they didn't know was that I liked to run. So, so I kind of got away from doing the chores, or I wouldn't do them exactly right, which didn't matter to me. And I think that frustrated her so much because I did a couple of marathons there, and from Naruna at the high school to the Lynchburg city line. That's like 24.3 miles. So I did that. So that was fun. I
so trained. You really did like to run.
I did like to run. Yeah. 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 So I ran all over the home. I mean, I just ran down to the low grounds, ran back up. I would run at least maybe 10 miles a day.
Wow.
Wow. So,
yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Can't do that now, but,
yes. But I've never been able to do that.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Talk to us about the transition from living in a group home to transitioning out. You said your house parents stayed one more year to see you graduate. What was it like leaving such a structured setting and becoming an adult?
So there were a lot of similarities, because when I went to Liberty and I stayed in the dorms, you basically traded one set of guys from another set of guys. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty much easy. Of course, the hard part was getting to know these guys. Mm-hmm. And being that my best friend was a year behind me, I had to wait a year before he came to school the following year. So, but luckily I had a few... had one or two girls from the girls' home in Rustburg, and then I think it was me going to the school at Liberty. So there was structure in the fact that I made new friends, but some of my old friends was coming later on. So
there was enough familiarity to carry you through the newness of it all.
Yeah.
What about on breaks? Because what do you do when you're coming from a group home setting? When people go home for the holidays, did you go home to your mother? Did you go home to the boys' home?
So my summers, I would stay at the home to work.
Okay.
During the holidays, I would go to see my mom. And a lot of that time was spent, I think, in Appomattox, and where she had gotten remarried. Yeah, pretty tough, because he didn't like me that well. There was a lot of, I guess, animosity between the two of us, just because he was under the state of mind that I was very manipulative. Mm-hmm. I didn't really like him either, because I just didn't like the way he treated my mom. Mm-hmm. So there was always that toughness there between the two of us. I wouldn't get along with him. He wouldn't get along with me. She was caught in the middle. Mm-hmm. And then eventually that marriage failed. So she had to move on. She moved to Virginia Beach. Mm-hmm. So she got a job out there. And then... there was just a lot of things that between me and my mom, like I wouldn't talk to my mom for, gosh, it'd be months before I'd catch up. You know, we'd spend an hours talking wherever she was at. I'd go live my life some more. Another 6 months later, I'm talking to her again. Oh, she's getting married again. Mm-hmm. Oh, so I need to come to Virginia Beach and, you know, see another wedding. That was a story in itself. But there was a lot of when you don't see somebody for so long, you have to relearn, you know.
Yeah, reacquaint.
Reacquaint, yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Life is messy, and sometimes people just need someone safe to talk to. We're here to listen, because everyone's story should be heard. 518 Counseling exists to empower children, adults, and families to overcome past experiences and create a path to being stronger both mentally and spiritually. Family is a nuanced concept. 518's family care team brings simple solutions to complex situations through professional intervention, interpersonal support, and parenting education. We strive for an outcome of mending families and keeping children safe. 518's Connect team equips and empowers volunteers with the training and support to serve confidently by matching their passions with opportunities. Our outreach is targeted to build partnerships with individuals, churches, agencies, and businesses. At Hat Creek Camp, we provide exceptional camp experiences with careful attention to the needs of youth, encouraging campers to grow through trust-based challenges and successes. It's a place to build relationships, inspire change, and transform lives. And in the context of knowing your house parents and seeing a stable marriage and a more stable way of sort of building a home, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, from before you went to the boys' home to after you went to the boys' home, did your perception of your
stability
mother
or home, you know, if someone asked you at that time something about going home, where was home?
I was, if I could take from a movie quote, home is where you hang your hat. I think that friends are home. Certain family members are home, you know. What you do in life, your work is your home, you know. It's just, you don't get stuck on just one place. I did a lot of traveling, and my home was basically a white van where I'd go to schools and do motivational films for, you know, high schools. So me and a friend of mine, Josh, who would travel the country and do these motivational films, Youth for Christ Ministry out of Campfell. Campfell Productions was the name of the company. They were in L.A., Irwindale. So we would travel the country, show these films. So my home was basically a hotel for the year. So that was always interesting. But I guess since now, since I've been married for 23 years, I've been at the home that we've been at for a number of years. I guess what I've gotten from what I was like at the home, what I learned from, you know, my house parents, from Mr. and Mrs. McCullough, it was just that you just got to stick with it. You got to love, you got to compromise, you got to, you know, do what you can to make sure that those Christian values ring true with people, that just do what you can to make sure that the other person feels welcomed, loved. And I think that with me and my wife, we definitely, we have our moments, but we also, I know that we love each other greatly. So it, I think a lot of that has to do with, you know, my house parents, the McCulloughs. They showed me what you know, between two people what real love was. Mm-hmm. So
how did you meet your wife?
I pick on her when I say she's stalked me. So my cousin that lives in Greensboro, but at the time they both lived in Patrick Springs near Stuart, Virginia. My dad had brought me up to meet one of his sisters, and her daughter was not at home at the time. But she told, Lori had told Leslie, my wife, said, "Hey, I heard that one of my cousins came by today, and they were talking. They had saw a picture of me or something." And anyway, it was just funny that she goes to her friend Lori. She goes, "Wouldn't it be great if we met, got married, and then I could call you family?" So, till this day, I think she still stalked me, but
she made a plan.
She made
stuck
a plan
to it.
Yep. But it was, we met at a radio station in Roanoke, Virginia. I was working at J93, which was a country station, and she was working for WROV, which is a rock station. Mm-hmm. And we met.
Dueling DJs.
Yes. Well, she was selling advertising. Oh, okay. I was the radio DJ. Mm-hmm. So, we met. She brought a client by to the J93 studios before we had moved to the main building on Brambleton Avenue. So, got to know her. Got to know the client that she had brought over. And saw her later on at the new studios, because I was transferring music, and didn't remember her name at first, but I knew it started with an L. So I was in the neighborhood.
We'll give you that.
Give me that. So from there, we pretty much developed a, you know, friendship, and then started dating, and I think we dated for like 2 years before we got married.
And here you are a few decades later.
Here I am a few decades later. Yeah.
As somebody who has experienced intervention firsthand, what do you think about prevention? So we talk a lot about on this show and in Vision 30, we talk a lot about the continuum of prevention, intervention, and reconciliation. And you lived in a home of intervention. What do you think about prevention? What could have been done early in your life to maybe prevent going into a group home setting?
I think part of the problem why I got sent to them was because my mom didn't have the resources that she needed to take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, like I said, and I go back to it, when you're a kid, having a kid, that's you're just too young. I think she had my grandmother, but she didn't have enough support from various other family members. So that probably would have been better if she had that structure, that support. I think that if she had had other folks that had lived it before her, you know, and was able to talk to her, you know, the counseling that she probably would have helped her help me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that probably would have helped her tremendously. But I think that prevention is very tough. Sometimes you have to live it to know it. So intervention is sometimes better. It was better for me because I needed to be taken out of that situation and put in a better situation so that I can learn how to live my life.
Mm-hmm.
And then she had to learn how to live hers,
mm-hmm,
separate from me. Is that a perfect situation? Probably not, but it was best for us.
So you're a cycle breaker in a lot of ways.
Allison, I have a question for you.
Sure.
So in Travis's case, going to the group home set him up for a better future. And I do believe that's obviously the intent of intervention, prevention, and reconciliation. Mm-hmm. You have been around a lot of people in both the intervention and the prevention space. In your opinion, and it might not be a black and white answer, is group home, intervention, things like that, is it, are you able to say it's for the better for kids, or do you think it does more harm than good? Or both and.
I am in awe of listening to your story because I think you are remarkable. I mean, the odds are stacked mm-hmm. against children
mm-hmm.
who go to group homes,
mm-hmm.
Children who are in foster care. The odds are against. So if you look at years worth of outcomes, the fact that you went on to college, the mm-hmm. fact that you've been married for decades is remarkable, absolutely remarkable. But when I think of that question, I would say it's more of a case by case basis. And I know children who are in group home settings right now. I know them by name. I see them out in the community. There are still situations where children are safer away from their own parents.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing about that is easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about something decades later, and telling this story is not easy. This is still raw.
Yeah.
So I think people who work in the setting and see it as their mission field,
mm-hmm.
you have to believe that it's helping the children.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're seeing more upstream approaches, it would be amazing if there were no need for foster care. It would be amazing if there were no need for group homes. But kind of like when we heard from Avery, if you're being physically harmed, or if there is sexual abuse,
mm-hmm.
I think you have to remove children from those settings.
Mm-hmm.
518 Family Services, the 518 comes from 2 Corinthians verses. Help me out here.
2 Corinthians 5:18.
Verse 18. I don't know why I always get tripped up on that, which is about reconciliation and most important, reconciliation with God. Were there parts of your story where you had to reconcile with God? I mean, obviously you've talked about reconciling with your mother over time. Were there times when you felt like you were farther away from God, or you were choosing to reconcile? You talked about the importance of the Christian values at the group home. Have you ever thought about reconciliation?
I think reconciliation is always something that's going to happen day in and day out. I appreciate what my mom did in sending me there.
Mm-hmm.
I think also that there's always going to be times where I felt that she abandoned me, but I think that I reconciled that with the life that I have now is because she had the gumption to send me there. But at the same time, after I reconciled that my life changed out so much better because I decided to, take advantage of what was before me.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many things that I wouldn't have done if I didn't decide to change my own stars, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I think God had a lot to do with that. He had given me gifts that I, you know, was able to expand on, like singing and sports. And hit those running when I got to the home. So I think that
literally and figuratively.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Hitting the road was pretty much one of those things. But I did a lot of biking back then as well. Did another marathon of biking, 26 miles. So did that all to support the Juvenile Diabetes Association. Mm-hmm. I think reconciliation is something that happens every day, because you see God's always allowing you, forgiving you for the sin that you commit, and I think that you just have to reconcile with yourself, forgive yourself for the things that you have either had no control over or the mistakes that you've made. And boy, I've made plenty of mistakes, but I know that God has forgiven me for all those. And I'm just blessed and astounded by what God has done for me over the years.
Well, you don't seem angry.
No. No, I it wouldn't do me any good to be angry. So I think it's take that anger aside and put it towards something more constructive.
You could start a whole podcast on just that.
Truly.
Truly. Right. You could teach the people.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell kids that have it rough right now not to give up. Don't give up. Take every opportunity you have and just keep going. Mm. There is greener grass on the other side for you. Just got to wait.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one thing I think we all learn, that God has his own timing. So you just need to wait. Something brighter is coming. I think that's what kids lose sight of, is that, man, I wish I had it now. You can't get it now, but it's coming. Just got to wait.
Do you think your outlook was different as a teenager?
It's a good question.
Were you angry as a teen? Were you resentful as a teen? Because hearing you talk right now, it sounds like a lot of healing has taken place, or a lot of reconciliation has taken place.
You wouldn't think of it. I think I had a little bit of both going on. A lot of the good things that happened in my life was because I knew at that time, because of God. But at the same time, the good things that happened allowed me to easily surrender that anger, surrender that,
You had the hope that allowed you to let go of the anger.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think a lot of the good things that happened, which God allowed to happen, but at the same time, I had to make the effort to do the work.
Totally.
To, have those good things happen. So, so I think letting the anger go, apologizing for what you had control over, letting God forgive you for the things you probably didn't have control over. There's just a lot of things going on. It's like a lot of puzzle pieces that needed to be put in that place at the time that it needed to be. It's a big, 5,000 piece puzzle that you don't necessarily will complete your entire life. Maybe when you're about to pass, will you finally put that last puzzle piece in? And I think that 5,000 puzzle piece is your life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you're not going to complete it till God's ready to call you home. So
you are former group home resident, married more than a couple of decades, college graduate. What are you doing now? You said you were a radio DJ. What are your opportunities now? What are you spending your time doing?
So Work for IT at Allstate, have been for 18 and a half years. I have had a comic book hobby since I was 11, and I've actually started to do comic book and toy shows in Salem.
Do you collect them or do you create them?
I actually collect them.
Cool.
But also sell them as well. Uh-huh. So
that is something that's kind of come back around to kids in the last decade is, you know, the beauty of comics. Yeah. And
the movies have helped.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah.
The movies have helped.
Yes.
Yeah.
But seeing that I'm a former educator, so I have to put this hat back on. A lot of comics and graphic novels are written at a higher level than traditional books. And I think we always thought, oh, they're reading comics or, oh, they're reading graphic novels. But in a lot of ways, it's conceptually harder.
Yeah, it is.
Or the vocab is harder. So I think
but when you look at a comic book, you got to know which direction to read. Mm-hmm. So, and sometimes they have certain aspects in each panel that you got to read in order. If you don't read it in order, it doesn't make sense.
It's very spatial.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's neat.
Yeah, it is. I think it makes it harder for, well, makes it harder, but also allows you to, once you figure it out, allows you to enjoy the story.
Mm-hmm. It opens up a whole other world.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yes, it does.
So you do that in Salem?
Yeah, I do two shows in Salem, and my first show is in Fishersville at the Augusta Expo in December.
Mm-hmm.
So
exciting.
We'll see how that plays out.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Anything else you'd like to share with us? You know, the podcast is called Mended Futures. I would say you're definitely the product of a mended future. Are you currently mending other people's futures? Do you feel like you are the village for other people who may have had a rougher start?
I think that maybe not directly, maybe indirectly, through my church, you know, I'm part of the choir and I do solos every once in a while. I think that the music that I choose might help somebody if they're listening via YouTube or watching the Highlands Road Church of the Brethren in Roanoke. If they're watching the YouTube channel, maybe a song will speak to them, maybe indirectly. So I think God's working through our church in that way, through music and through the sermons that our pastor does. So I think that, you know, not directly, the kids that I meet or the people that I meet at, you know, my comic book shows, I'm always, you know, outgoing and very vocal to them, you know, helping them out. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
I would say that's directly.
Yeah, that can be directly. Yeah.
And I think it's fair to say that you are continually working on mending your own future as well.
That would be correct.
Mm-hmm.
I would agree with you on that.
Mm-hmm.
Going over my own life, I just, whatever that's going on in your life, and my dad took his own life. Just, if you know anybody like that or you're feeling that yourself, don't give up. Reach out to somebody. And when you take your own life, you're not just removing yourself from the equation, you're cheating other people from having you in their lives. Mm-hmm. So I think that talk to somebody. I mean, just talk to anybody that, you know, a hotline or something of that nature or somebody that you really trust. So don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the one thing I keep on saying. Don't give up.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Mended Futures podcast, hosted by Allison Jordan and Taylor Melvin, produced by Liam Chafin, Sue England, Allison Jordan, Robert Day, Sully Jugar, and Taylor Melvin. You can find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to like, share, and subscribe to see more.